This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Hi, it's me, but I'm not Patsy. I'm Bria, filling in for Patsy Gill at Joy on Paper Radio, and I'm here in beautiful Clearwater, Florida, and I'm thrilled to be here for a science fiction-themed show. And the first thing I would like to do is have Big Ed. He's going to play a book buzz for a review that I did. So I do science fiction book buzzes here for Joy on Paper as a special correspondent. And my May book buzz was a book called Rogue Pursuit. And we're going to be chatting with author B.L. Dean in just a moment. But first, Big Ed, will you play that book buzz?
Hello, fellow sci-fi readers. This is author Bria Burton reporting for Joy on Paper with your science fiction book buzz. Today's communique to galaxies near and far includes a 2023 series starter, Rogue Pursuit by B.L. Dean. The young adult novel is book one in the Shades of Starlight series and is available in print and ebook. Now, let's download the book buzz. In the midst of a smuggling run, 17-year-old Perrin Hightower gets recruited to assist Ty, a confed cop. Little does Ty know, the ex-partner he's tracking down for betrayal is also Perrin's ex-boyfriend, a double agent involved in her underground network. One of the best wormhole pilots, Perrin smuggles necessities to the outer colonies. A recent cryptic message from her ex reveals he's on the run with galactic-level dangerous information, and Perrin joins Ty under false pretenses. She needs to find out what her ex knows and get that info back to the network. They travel the wormholes from system to system, and Perrin has to keep up her game of cat and mouse with Ty to hide her true intentions. When they discover the Confed Intelligence Agency has been tracking their movements, Ty confesses secrets of his own. Each new revelation in the case leads Perrin into greater jeopardy and into a deeper conspiracy than she could have imagined. This space opera spy thriller launches readers into a page-turning, swashbuckling adventure with a touch of romance. Author B.L. Dean is a science...
Okay, so it cut off right there at the end. But since we're about to talk to author B.L. Dean, let's just go ahead and see if we've got her on the phone.
Hi Bria, I am here.
Hi, Becky. So your pen name is B.L. Dean, but is it okay if I call you Becky?
Yes, please do.
Wonderful. I am so thrilled to be able to talk to you today. I had so much fun reading your book. And one of the things that came to mind as I was listening to the book buzz I had just done a month ago was, oh my gosh, it is this swashbuckling adventure. It is like Breathless, nonstop. I mean, the reader doesn't get a lot of opportunity to sit and ponder as one thing just goes to the next in this really fun adventure. So first of all, I wanted to talk to you about your main characters. So you've got Perrin, she's 17, she actually turns 18 in the story, but she starts off 17-year-old girl, and then there's Ty, and he is maybe 19, and he's working for the Confed. She's basically a smuggler, and you've got this wonderful dynamic with these two characters where the point of view switches back and forth. Can you just tell us a little bit about what led you to write these characters the way you wrote them, and even the point of view decision to go back and forth between these two?
Yeah, first of all, thanks for having me. Glad to be here. And thank you for the review. This book, actually, so a lot of my books, I come with the idea in sort of various ways. And so sometimes it's the premise, sometimes it's the setting. And this was actually one of my first books I ever wrote where it was Perrin who came to my head before anything else.
Mm-hmm.
I just had this picture in my head of a smuggler, a girl who uses her family shipping business to get needed goods to the colonies. So she has kind of her own standards. She won't smuggle guns. She won't smuggle drugs. She's
right.
Sort of a benevolent smuggler, if you will.
Yes. She's kind of like a young female Han Solo.
Yes. That's one of the ways I pitched it. Yes.
Uh-huh.
She still has standards. She wants to help people, but she doesn't have any trouble breaking the law. She's pretty sassy, not afraid to, you know, march through a Capitol with hidden goods in her backpack kind of thing.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And so I just really loved her and the idea of this girl who knows a lot about the galaxy and wants to help people, but is also kind of a fun character to follow.
Oh, yes. And she is a lot of fun. She is.
Yes, thank you. I have fun writing her. And one of my favorite tropes, obviously, as you could probably tell from this book, is sort of the enemies to romance trope. And so I wanted her to have a really good foil in someone who's still facing sort of the same dilemmas that she is. So both of them in the book come to the point of questioning what they have thought is good and right and who the good guys are and who the bad guys are. And but they come at it from totally different ways. So she has seen a lot of the colonies. She has seen the people on planets that are far from the central system who don't have a lot, and she wants to help them. And Ty has never left the central system before these books, and so his view is very much persuaded by the fact that his mother works for the Ruby Confederation, and he's only seen the central planets. He doesn't really know what it's like in the colonies. So both of them have to come to question their loyalties, their beliefs, but they start in very different places.
Yes, and yes. So. And well, you described it perfectly. The arc of each character, you get their perspectives back and forth with each chapter, you see this transition that's happening as Perrin begins to question things and then as Ty begins to question things. So you perfectly described they come at it from their own different angle, but they're both doing a similar thing of am I on the right side? Am I doing the right thing? So I love those questions that come up in science fiction, just in general. That's such wonderful things to have your characters do, but especially in science fiction, as these are, you know, galaxy far away, but still very human things happening that really draw the reader in. And tell me about Ty. Was he inspired by anybody that you know? Was he just this character you came up with?
He actually wasn't really. So when I first plotted this book, or when Perrin first came to my head, I guess, the book was going to be more of a murder mystery in space.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. And I started writing and it just wasn't working. Apparently, even though I like to read those, it was not my genre to write. But I do love space opera. Mm-hmm. And I do love spy movies. And I think it was, I had just seen, I don't know how many of your listeners have seen, I think from 2016, it's a movie called A Man from U.N.C.L.E. And it's a spy movie set in the Cold War based on an older TV series.
Yes, yep. Yeah, mm-hmm.
So I think it's very underrated. I really enjoyed it. And that was sort of where their relationship grew from was in the movie. It's more of a friendship, reluctant friendship that develops between a Russian spy and an American, or I mean a German spy and an American spy.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But this time I kind of put it into space.
Right,
and so
yes.
I love that. The interplay of them, where they have to work together, but they know that they're on opposite sides of this Cold War.
Yes, yes.
But they still have to rely on each other. So,
and the things that they learn from each other throughout the book, of where
yes.
Ty mm-hmm. gets to see the actual people as they go on this journey. I really am excited to talk about the wormholes, because
yes.
as a science fiction fan and writer myself, I love seeing what other sci-fi authors come up with for space travel, for just ways to bounce from galaxy to galaxy. And the wormholes were so fascinating to me. So they're on this journey and they're going all over, and Ty is getting to see other planets that he's never seen. As you mentioned, he's from the main prime, you know, planet area, and then that he's able to go off with Perrin, who's traveled the colonies, and see what these people deal with, how they can't get supplies, and how, wait, why isn't the main, you know, planets providing? Well, they, you know, have all these rules and regulation, and we can't get what we need. So the way that they get out to these different planets and different galaxies is through the wormholes. Will you just talk a little bit? I love the imagery of the wormhole. It's kind of like, for those many of you who are sci-fi fans, of course, have likely seen Star Wars. So it's similar to the hyperdrive, where you're going through the Millennium Falcon and you've got this bright light. But in your book, the wormholes have very specific colors and specific reasons for the colors. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, so when I developed the series, I love space opera, the planet hopping, you know, the Star Wars, like you mentioned, all the fun places that they get to go and see. And I wanted a way for them to be able to get from planetary system to system. And the faster-than-light travel is always, right, a part of science fiction. It's how do they travel? Is it warp drive? Is it the hyperdrive? Kind of what function do they use and how does that work? And I didn't really want to get into the heavy science. So I grew up a huge Star Trek fan, and I actually really love, my favorite series is Deep Space Nine, where the space station is outside a wormhole. And so that's sort of my, what was in my head as I crafted these was the way that looks, where it's just black space and stars until you fly right up to the right point, and then this wormhole opens, and it's basically a bridge that takes you immediately, or not immediately, but, you know, 30 minutes to an hour, from one planetary system to a totally different one.
Yes, I want to say, even though to your point that it's not necessarily hard science fiction, there, you know, there are theories out there about these things. So I think you're very much in the right realm of talking about how this could have happened. And then the colors, what kind of research did you do? Did you come up with the idea of the different colors and meaning different things and the different frequencies, or talk a little bit about that?
I feel bad answering this question because it was really something where as I was writing, it just sort of came out.
Oh,
I didn't necessarily plan it when I started. It was, okay, these are colorful. I want them to be bright and colorful. And then I wanted there also to be some sort of system, you know, like in any science fiction or fantasy, you want rules to how things work, that kind of thing.
Yes, and it's effective. It's very effective because it makes the reader understand that Perrin is the expert. She can look at the different color schemes and know, oh, this wormhole is unstable. I need to adjust this and that.
Yeah.
And then, you know, Ty is actually terrified when he's going through. So it's this great dynamic the two of them have, because then later you find out she's afraid of being in a spacesuit out in space. So they just have these wonderful moments together.
So there wasn't actually a ton of research into specific colors. I actually researched some color theory, so things like complementary or the triadic schemes, things like that, sort of the science of the color wheel,
but
not necessarily the science of individual colors.
Okay.
So, and then when it came time to create a new wormhole, I would just sort of be like, oh, what colors haven't I used yet? What would look cool with that? And I spent lots of time on paint sites and things like that.
Oh, that, yeah. And sometimes it is something as simple as, okay, we're going to look at what this could mean and run with it. And it worked. It's very effective. And has this, like, as I'm reading, it's so easy to imagine it. I think that's what's so fun, is being able to picture this bright burst of color through a wormhole and the different schemes that they go through of color schemes. And there's also this, going back to this kind of espionage and spy. So Ty essentially is a spy, and you find that out very quickly because you're in his perspective, and he's, you know, hiding things from Perrin, she's hiding things from him, but they have to work together to try and track down this other spy. And so as we learn more about his history and his father was trapped, you know, and that, again, not to get into too many spoilers, because I want readers to be able to sit and just enjoy the ride of this book. Tell me a little bit about, just as you imagined in the world building aspect, how some of these, just big picture, just what can happen if a wormhole collapses, what, you know, how those types of things kind of came into the story.
So with any science fiction, you have the science and you have what it makes possible, but you also have the dangers it introduces. Sometimes it's metaphors, sometimes it's just, I mean, space has a million ways to kill you. So any new thing you create, basically you're going out into a vacuum in a little tin can and hoping that it stays together.
Right.
So,
oh, yeah.
Adding on top of that, these sort of unknowns, they don't know where the wormholes came from or who built them or why they exist. They just know that it allows them to travel and to colonize uninhabited planets. So, of course, there had to be some element of danger to that as well. And it just sort of made me imagine, you know, I kind of have a little bit of history sketched out in my head. Perrin, at this point in the galaxy, they have three full empires with dozens of planets that are colonized. But I kind of mapped out some of the history of it started on the planet Ruby Prime, and they found the first wormhole. and how they got through that and how they started exploring the galaxy. And Perrin really idolizes the early explorers who went out and discovered and started mapping the galaxy and things like that. But just then thinking about early Earth explorers and the dangers that come with that and the planet not knowing what you're going to find or where there's going to be food or water.
And they run into that. They crash on a planet where they're like, we're starving, there's water, but can we drink it? I mean, you have this wonderful world building where the story just carries you, and then the world building upholds it, if that makes sense. There's no info dumps in this entire book. You provide the world building when it's necessary, and I really appreciate that as a reader. That very much draws you in because you're in the story, and things that the reader needs to know, you do let them know when they need to know it. So I thought you did such an excellent job with that. And I wanted to ask you, your series. So this is the first book in a series. Mm-hmm. And I believe Aethon Books is your publisher. Mm-hmm. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So do you mind just talking a little bit about your experience with publishing, with, you know, you've released all three books, is that right, in the series?
All four.
Mm-hmm. Okay, there's four books in the series. So now this first book came out this year. Am I right about that?
Yes, it came out in March.
In March. Okay, so then tell us a little bit about that. Did you write four books in 3 months?
I did not.
I know the answer, but share with our listeners what that process was like for you.
Yeah, so the first book, Rogue Pursuit, I actually wrote back in 2016.
Okay.
And it landed me my current agent, who's fantastic. She loved it. She likes science fiction. And we started shopping it, and young adult science fiction just isn't a huge market, sadly. I love it, and I think there should be lots more. But there weren't a ton of...
Currently it's not? That's interesting to hear.
Yeah, it's just really with, especially the big four publishers, there's just not a lot. There's a few big authors that write really amazing stuff, but there's just not, it's not as big as, say, fantasy or thriller right now.
Okay, I could see that. Okay,
yeah. So we actually decided it wouldn't hurt to try one of those Twitter pitch events.
Oh.
Where you tweet, and so I think my tweet was something like Mission Impossible plus a female Han Solo, something like that, like you said.
Oh, yeah, okay, I caught on to it.
Yeah.
As a reader, I got it.
You did. So that was back in 2020.
Okay,
and
yes.
Aethon liked the tweet. We sent them the first manuscript.
And for those who just might not even be familiar with what a Twitter pitch party is, the idea behind it is agents, publishers, they are on Twitter, and there are people who host what you would call a pitch party, and they might be looking for specific things. Like it might be a horror pitch party or a fantasy or mystery.
This was a sci-fi fantasy day.
Okay, sci-fi fantasy day. So you are posting your pitch as a tweet, which is, you know, you have so many characters to get your story idea out there, and publishers are reading those and saying, "Ooh, I'm interested," and they maybe hit a heart, which means they like your pitch and they want you to submit to them.
Yeah, so we got that interest in the first book, and that was 2020, and so I was kind of between novels and didn't really know what to write next. And a lot of the conventional writer wisdom says, you know, don't finish a series till you know you can publish the first one. Move on to something else, kind of thing. But it was the pandemic, and I was bored, and it was terrible for all of us. And so I wrote the second book, which features the space pirate as the main character, and I just really needed to entertain myself.
So we've got Rogue Pursuit is Perrin and Ty, mostly, you know, more Perrin's story, I would say, overall. But in the sequel, we switch perspectives and we get to follow the pirate. Okay.
Yeah, each book switches perspectives. And so about halfway through Rogue Pursuit, you meet the space pirate named Digger. And
yes.
So he becomes the main character in book two.
Fun. I'm looking forward to picking up that book next.
Thanks. Yeah, so I kind of just entertained myself putting pirate tropes into the rough drafts writing pirates in space. And then when Aethon was interested in the first book, they wanted a series.
And
they like to publish everything rapid release, is what they call it, so a month apart. So they asked if I could come up with a pitch for the rest of the series. They asked for trilogy. I actually, when I mapped it all out, thought, I think I need four books to finish. And they said, great. And so I had...
Even better, right?
Exactly. Although after finishing the third one and having to figure out the ending, I was like, oh, why did I say four? Why didn't I just help the trilogy? But yeah, so I just mapped out the rest and we kind of estimated how long I thought it would take me to finish writing them all. And then once the last one was finished and submitted to the editor, they set the release dates just 1 month apart. So they all came out. They came out March, April, May, and June this year.
Oh, that's such a cool thing, because let's just say for readers, this is a fantastic thing, because you pick up a book in the past, and I'm sure you've been a reader probably most of your life, right? You pick up a book and it's a series starter, you might not get the next book for years. And so you're just hanging, waiting to see, like, well, where is this going to go? Now, I will say, your book is a complete book. There's not major cliffhangers in the sense of, you know, as you shared, we're going on to mm-hmm. Digger's story in book two. But, mm-hmm. you know, there are things that are unresolved in the bigger picture. But for the most part, Perrin and Ty have a very complete arc. Their story gets finished in the first book. But it's, you know, as a reader, you go, oh, but there's more here. And you know.
And they will come back. So.
Oh, good. That's great to know, too, that they'll still continue.
Each of the four books has two new main characters continuing sort of the galactic plot of, is this revolution going to happen? But then all of the characters appear in all the books. So by the fourth and final book, you have all eight main characters play pretty big roles.
Oh, that almost like just, sorry to use a comic book reference, like Avengers Assemble and Justice League all coming together. I love that. That's fantastic. And it usually works well in a series like this, where each character that needs to be introduced, by the time you get to the ensemble, the reader knows these characters. You don't have to do all these little backstories for each character. I mean, there can be a little bit of that, but that's fun. I look forward to reading this.
And then I had fun just sort of mixing up, like, what two characters can we put together that would be interesting sort of thing. So.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Yeah. And just to briefly touch on the romance element, now, classical romance, you've got boy meets girl, girl meets boy, and usually there's obstacles, there's people in the way, and you do have some of those classic romance elements, obviously, in the way Ty and Perrin have their whole relationship, that where and you, without too many spoilers, you see where they go at the very end. You do find out how they work out. So is that something that just kind of naturally came to the story as you were developing Perrin, or is there more to it?
The more to it is really just that I love books with a romantic thread. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I also write romance, so it kind of came together. I knew I wanted all of them, so all four is a romance as well as the science fiction.
Okay,
I always get kind of disappointed when there's a book that doesn't have a romance. There's many wonderful books. You don't have to have romance. I just personally, that's a preference. So I knew that I wanted all four of them to have a couple. So when I developed each one, it was also with the future books, sort of which tropes I could use. So like the third one is estranged childhood best friends. Things like that.
Uh-huh. So. Oh, yes. Okay. And it's very effective in this book. So it's been a pleasure to read. And talk a little bit about your website, your social media. What do you have coming up next? How can readers find these wonderful books, all four books available, where readers can track you down?
Yeah, all four books are on sale on Amazon. There's Kindle and paperback. And then audiobooks are coming July, August, and September.
Oh, wonderful. I love audiobooks. I love listening.
Yes, they're being recorded now, so those are coming soon. The best places to kind of find out, I'm mostly on Instagram, Becky Dean Writes, and then BeckyDeanWrites.com. I have two newsletters people can sign up for. One is for my contemporary books that I write, and then one is for the science fiction specifically.
Okay, wonderful. And are you, so now that this series has released, are you kind of focusing on your romance books, or do you have another science fiction coming in the future?
I don't have a date, but I have a couple other science fiction books finished that my agent is looking for a home for.
Okay, wonderful.
And because I have too many ideas, I'm also sort of in the back of my head plotting a prequel series to this one set in the same galaxy. So
that is awesome. Oh yes. Okay. Let's just keep this galaxy going. It's really a lot of fun, and especially just in the YA for younger people to be able to read, and just to let people listening know, it's totally clean. There is no graphic anything. There is a little bit of violence, but what would you say, PG-13 at the most?
Yeah, I kind of call it PG-13 light. There's some violence because it's spies and war, but there's nothing graphic, and the swearing's all made up.
So. Yes. So I know parents who want to know that can appreciate that as well. So, Becky, it's been so awesome to talk to you. I am thrilled with your book and with the release of all these books. It's really fun for readers to know, okay, I got another one to read tomorrow.
There's a lot of them, yes. Keep you busy this summer.
Yes, so thank you so much for coming on Joy on Paper, and I just wish you the best.
Yeah, thank you so much, Bria. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
And as far as I know, we're headed to commercial break next. Is that right, Big Ed? Okay, and we'll be back shortly.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Have you ever faced disaster? The Red Cross is always there for you. The Red Cross responds to a call for help every 8 seconds. They have never turned anyone down. Now they need your financial support so that they can be ready to help you when the need arises. Donate online at redcross.org. Thank you.
Are you an author? An artist? An inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
Do you dread being called on to speak at meetings or family functions? Have you envied those who can sway an audience with well-chosen words? Do you know that people who speak well earn more money, earn more recording careers? Gain the confidence to master any speaking situation. Toastmasters will allow you to find your voice. Go to Toastmasters.org to locate the club nearest you.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hi, it's me. But I'm not Patsy, I'm Bria, here at Joy on Paper Radio as the guest host for a science fiction themed radio show. And my next guest, we just had a wonderful guest, Becky Dean, pen name BL Dean, and we got a chance to chat with her. And our next guest is going to be Daniel Schwabauer, and I really need to ask him if I'm saying his name correctly. So he is going to be coming on, and we get to chat about his wonderful book. I cannot wait to talk to him about this book. It's one of those books that I put it down and went, I want to read that again. So before we talk to him, though, I did a book buzz. So for those who are just tuning in, I am a special correspondent for Joy on Paper, and I do the science fiction book buzz for Patsy, and she will have her show every Tuesday, Thursday, so we're here from 11 a.m. to 12 p.m. Eastern for Joy on Paper, and Patsy, the regular host, will play these book buzzes where I review a science fiction book, and I send it to her. So we've got a book buzz for... did it come through, Big Ed? Okay, so we've got a book buzz for Operation Grendel, a book that I reviewed, and the author will be on shortly. So, Big Ed, when you're ready, we're ready.
Hello, fellow sci-fi readers. This is author Bria Burton reporting for Joy on Paper with your science fiction book buzz. Today's communique to galaxies near and far includes a 2021 military science fiction thriller, Operation Grendel, by Daniel Schwabauer. The novel is available in print, ebook, and audiobook with stellar narration by Adam Verner. Now, let's download the book buzz. The Grendels have invaded Quelon, and it's up to Corporal Raymond Dahl, a military journalist, to expose the truth to all five Edge colonies, now in danger of being invaded by shock troops, but worse, invaded by their AI worms in the form of a forced sim collar, which would effectively turn every man, woman, and child into a Grendel. The United Colonies fleet is ready to offer the Grendels a treaty after massive losses, and the Edge colonies would be left to fend for themselves. However, when the PsyOps officer who assigned the war story exposé to Corporal Dahl gets killed on the way to the peace talks, Dahl's new mission becomes far more complex. He must now stand in as the ambassador for the peace talks himself. In other words, he has to lie in order to tell the truth. And worse, his own benign AI may have been compromised. This edge-of-your-seat military thriller, set in a distant star system, explores deep philosophical questions about the nature of truth, propaganda, artificial intelligence, and the cost of freedom. Author Daniel Schwabauer studied under science fiction great James Gunn before graduating with honors from Kansas University's master's program in creative writing in 1995.
Okay, so that was the book buzz, and now we're going to be chatting with the author. Daniel, are you there?
I am here, Bria. Thanks for having me on.
Hi, Daniel. I so appreciate you coming on the show, and oh my goodness, I could not wait to talk to you about your book. It was one of those... My mind was blown. Let's just put it that way. I don't want to get into too many spoilers because I want readers to experience it the way it is meant to be experienced. But let's get talking about Operation Grendel. So this book came out a couple years ago, and tell us a little bit about your process and what led you to even want to write this story. You were in a far distant galaxy. There's space travel, there's espionage, there's these military, encampments, for lack of a better word, on these different planets, and then there are the Grendels, the enemy of the main protagonist. So talk a little bit about where this story came from.
Yeah. Well, like with any novel, I think it was the process of putting a bunch of different ideas together. In my view, really good stories are usually two ideas or more ideas that are sort of combined together in an unexpected way. And Operation Grendel came out of my own study of yellow journalism. I spent about 3 years studying not just yellow journalism, but the origin of modern propaganda, which started back during World War One. In doing that, I was really fascinated by the idea that that propaganda is based more on narratives built around facts than around lies that are just, taking things that aren't true at all. And so it made me think, if we're actually in another era of yellow journalism, then the propaganda is going to be, maybe similar techniques, but they're going to use different technology. And my idea was, what if this is projected into the future? What is it going to look like when we have artificial intelligence that is hardwired to the human brain through something like Neuralink, but more advanced? How will we be able to tell truth from lies? And the origin of that question, I mean, it goes way back. This is an ancient question, but I was at the Hugo Awards in 2017. The Worldcon was in Kansas City, where I live. And there was a panel on artificial intelligence. They were talking about these amazing systems that are being developed, not just in AI, but also in quantum computing, which is exponentially faster than the fastest computers that what we think of as like desktop computers or even supercomputers. And the panelists were like NASA guys, really smart people. They were talking about how you know whether something is intelligent. And they said, you can tell something's intelligent if it can change its behavior based on predictions about the behavior of others. So the small monkey hides the banana behind his back when the big monkey comes into the cage. And based on that...
Fascinating. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So the panel said, what we need to do is we need to teach these very advanced artificial intelligence systems to lie to us. And... I was sitting there thinking, have you guys not read any science fiction? Like, what in the world? Like, how do you arrive at that?
So that was their conclusion?
that was their conclusion. Let's build these extremely advanced systems and teach them to lie to us. And that turned over in my head for at least a year as I was just finishing my studies of yellow journalism. And I thought, you know, I've always wanted to write a military science fiction novel. I was never in the military, but I was a journalist. So what if I inverted this thing and I made the kind of special forces troops, instead of the journalists following them, the special forces troops are following the journalist because he's impersonating someone and he has to use his talent for lying and for propaganda in order to pull one over, not just on the enemy AI systems, but on his own side. What would that look like, and what would we learn about the nature of lies and the nature of truth in the process? So it was to me, it was a really fascinating idea, in part because it gives you a playground to address all sorts of things, but it also made me curious, what sort of person would this would want to do this? You know, what kind of person would they find that could pull this off?
You've given me such insight into where some of this story came from, because it's a very complex character, and I say that almost without trying to give away too much.
It's
a very complex character. As the reader follows him through this journey, there are moments that I'm going, I don't even know if I like this protagonist very much. And there's other moments that I go, okay, you know, he's kind of a cool guy. But it is really a tug of war, even for the reader, walking with this protagonist. And it's... The way you tell the story, I just was speaking to another author, B.L. Dean. Her story, in terms of how it's laid out, is very chronological. And that can be a wonderful thing, especially for a fast-paced, edge-of-your-seat thriller, sci-fi type thriller. Your story is not chronological. It bounces
right
back. And sometimes you don't know if, okay, is this guy, because there's a moment near the beginning where there's an explosion. And so you almost are going, well, wait, what happened? Suddenly we're deep in this other arena, and then it's kind of like he's coming out of this explosion, so he's remembering something. So there are some really interesting choices that you made as a writer to carry the reader through this story in a back and forth kind of, to me, it's very complex, but as a reader, I could follow it. I could go with it. And so talk a little bit about your decision making as you laid out how the plot was going to progress, how these flashback moments would happen. Can you talk a little bit about that part of the process?
Sure. Yeah. Well, that was one of the things about this particular story, where the story itself, the character, and the idea that I wanted to get across sort of dictated some decisions that I had to make. And I think those decisions were correct, because I think
I agree.
Sometimes I think the story a story will demand something from you that you may not feel quite equipped, you know, that kind of challenges you as a writer to do something that you're not familiar with. And in this case, because it's being written by a journalist, I thought that it was necessary for it to unfold as journalism.
Mm.
So it's told in four feature stories that are told, they're not exactly chronological, because he places events that led up to other events within each of those features.
Right, yes.
It's not presented as hard news, it's presented as feature stories, so those have a certain shape to them in journalism. But what I wanted was for the overall feel of the thing to end up being to the reader what he was intending for the fictional readers of this, you know, futuristic journalism. I wanted the reader to come away from it feeling like they had been the victim of a psyop, but understanding how that psyop worked.
Yes.
So the curtain is pulled back and they go, oh, this is how psychological warfare actually, you know, works, even in the real life. This is how it works.
And I can tell you, for me, it was effective. It was so effective. And victim feels like a strong word, because I definitely didn't feel like a victim, but I was a victim of the psyop once I finished the book. And I just went, Oh, now I want to go back and look at some of these things. And some of the best writing out there effectively does that. And speaking of your rap sheet, you've got your award-winning author. This book, am I understanding correctly that this book actually won an award?
Yes, it did. Won a Realm Award, and the audiobook won an award as well. Yeah.
Yes.
Adam Brenner did a great job with the audio, I think.
As an author myself, and I'm a science fiction writer, the ability to take your reader on a journey and then make their head kind of spin by the very end, that's like the things writers dream of doing for their audience. So to again be able to talk to you about what this looked like, how you went about this, it's really fascinating for me, even as an author, but also I know as readers, that's something that it's just such an enjoyable experience to read that kind of book that does it successfully, and to not, you know, there I've definitely read books that don't do it successfully, and you just kind of go away like, I know what you were trying to do, but it didn't work for me.
Yeah, yeah.
And so for this, it very much worked for me. And again, I don't want to spoil it. I really would love the listeners to be able to pick up your book and just go through it, see how they get to walk through the experience, what questions will raise in their minds. Because that was one of the things I remember thinking, gosh, I have a lot of questions about this, but we're moving on from this. Okay. And there is a part of that where the author wants the reader to question a few things to keep them page turning. But if the reader ends up questioning too many things, that could lead to the type of confusion that makes people put down a book. I think you have managed that fine tightrope walk of you've got something that readers are going to ask questions, but they're not going to want to put this book down. So you mentioned you do not have a military background and your journalism background. So tell me about just some of the, and let's get a little bit into the sci-fi elements, a little bit of the, you know, the idea with the Grendels, the idea with these military units. And what kind of research did you have to do, whether it be military-wise or even looking into AI? I know that's two pretty broad questions.
Yeah. No, it's fine. I did a lot of research into... Well, first of all, I've been reading not just military science fiction, but books on the military for years. I ask a lot of questions of friends who are in the military when I need certain details that feel like, you know, I'm not going to be able to capture this without a firsthand experience, either through reading someone's personal account of what they did in the war, or, you know, just like talking to someone. And to me, the things that actually move people are the really particular details that feel like, you know, this is what the military is like in this respect. And I tried to stay away from things that would kind of give away that I, you know, did not know what I was talking about. There's a certain military protocols or whatever. I mean, I have him, you know, as a journalist, hoping that even a reservist journalist who's had minimal training, that if he makes any mistakes, the military readers, the veterans or whatever, will kind of say, well, that's because he's an idiot journalist. You know, he doesn't know what he's talking about.
Blame
it on the character rather than the author.
Yes, yeah. There is something to be said about that, that your point of view character has that limitation. And so then I think it's effective. I think your reader can go with it and say like, okay, there's a few moments that maybe this guy doesn't know what's going on with this. And overall, I think it was very much, I was not in the military either, but it felt very authentic. And because it's not our planet, we're not on Earth, we're on this other planet somewhere, galaxy far, far away. I think you as a science fiction author, there is a bit more leeway there to imagine what these military units would do. It's not that you have to match exactly what the military units do here on Earth. So there is that, you know, that's one of the pleasures of being a science fiction author. You do get to make up some of that stuff.
Yes, yeah. And that's part of the fun for me is just, you know, the worldview build, the world building and the sense of what are you zooming in on. I will say that I've had two really cool experiences with this after the book is out that just really shocked me. One of them was having dinner with a former captain of military intelligence who told me that his job was doing in this book what Raymond Dalton's job is. And that he said, yeah, and it was a very surreal conversation because I didn't go. I just happened to be invited over to someone's house, not knowing what they did in the army. And as we talked about this book, he said, yeah, that was my job. I did what this character is doing. And obviously, he didn't do the science fiction element.
Sure, sure.
Stuff,
but what an incredible experience. Of, yeah.
Yeah.
To be able to say,
Yeah, the other thing was I got a letter about 3 months after the book was released from a military journalist who wrote me a very heartfelt letter, and he said, thank you for telling the truth. And he was talking about what journalism, or at least what it is currently. So he was talking about the idea that truth can be used as a, what's the word for this? It's a commodity, you know, that's parsed out, and instead of being given freely, it's actually used in order to. This sounds so conspiratorial, and I mean, I think we're
science fiction writers. Go for it.
Well, you know, the fascinating thing to me is that if you think of propaganda as pushing people the direction they're already going, but a little faster and a little farther than they would go themselves, that it's not necessarily trying to convince people of things that are absolutely wrong. It's saying what they already believe, just push it a little farther and make it more extreme, so that instead of them seeing their opponents or their political enemies as nuanced human beings, they see them as cartoonish villains. And if you do that with both sides of something, seeing everybody on their team as being nuanced and everybody on the other team as being simpletons, and it's a great way to kind of manipulate people, because you're not asking them to leap from something they don't believe at all to something they do believe, but you're just taking that little step, pushing them a little bit farther. And that's the creepy part of it to me. In fact, I read the CIA handbook for psychological warfare as part of the background for this.
Oh.
And I was expecting something very different than what I got. And it was, I mean, it wasn't nearly as extreme as I thought. The whole thing made sense. It was just the concept that, you know, you use truth, but you use it.
Yeah.
You use it because it's a thing to be given out in bits and pieces, not delivered wholesale.
It's also timely, I will say. It's also timely, and that,
yeah,
that
yeah.
I think that's what helped as a reader was going, I'm reading about this, again, galaxy far away, these characters who are off doing, you know, other planetary, and they're trying to fight this AI, this enemy that's basically people who have been taken over by an antagonistic artificial intelligence. And so the bigger premise sounds just very much like, oh, it's this far off thing, but it hits close to home as you read the book. It's so incredible how you manage to raise these wonderful real world questions in the midst of this very, you know, seemingly far future. We're not there, but there are things that apply to today, and even just how you describe looking at the enemy in this book, everybody sees the Grendels as just this, you know, they're just this monster, but then the main character actually encounters, now there's some very interesting things that happen when he encounters the Grendels, and I'm not going to spoil them, but when he's looking at them and he's evaluating what is going on in the minds of these mm-hmm. people,
yeah.
but he's starting to see them as people, and so there's an incredible and it's part of the character arc, but it's also part of the PSYOP. So it's an incredible multi-layered. Oh, it's hard not to spoil it as I'm talking about it, but I think the artificial intelligence side of it too is such a, oh, that when you talk about, gosh, some of these things are a little scary when you think about how propaganda can go. I feel the same way, and I also feel the same way about how artificial intelligence can go. And I don't know if you're like me, but I often will think about Ian Malcolm, the quote from Jurassic Park where he says, yeah, your scientists, you know, they were so preoccupied with whether they could, they didn't stop to think whether they should. Every time a new technological whatever, or even your description of going to that conference and hearing, let's build these things and teach them how to lie. You just stop and go, wait a minute, hold on. Is there an ethical question being raised here before we do that? So I love how you raise the ethical questions in this book. It's so effective. So talk a little bit about your thoughts about what happens, and again you can decide how much you want to reveal to the reader. The back of your book cover does share that, you know, the main character might lose his mind to the AI. Talk a little bit about that element, if you would.
Sure. Yeah. Well, I mean, there's a lot of talk today about AI and all of the downside of it, whether it's, you know, stealing artwork or creating derivative artwork that then, you know, causes market problems where AIs will be creating all the book covers, for instance, or writing all the novels or writing the screenplays. We tend to focus on the downside of things as like clear lines. It's just what if, as with most technologies, the downside is actually not the thing we expected. There's the law of unintended consequences, right? And what if the great weakness of us as human beings is not our ability to be bent to the will of some, you know, tyrannical power because of pain avoidance, but because we're so easily bought off by pleasure and comfort and entertainment? The whole bread and circuses thing. Now, I'm not saying the AIs in here are doing bread and circuses, but there's that idea that we can build these systems that will just make everything that we don't like go away. And really, we don't have to do that much. It's not like what are we compromising? All we're compromising is a little bit of our autonomy. And, you know, the creepy thing about this is people have told me that if they could get one of these AI links, a comm link like the Grendels have, that would be like that they would do it in a heartbeat.
And we've got to wrap up. Daniel, I have loved chatting with you about this book. You can find Daniel at his website, danschwalbauer.com, and find more of his books and what he's writing. Thank you, dear listeners. We really appreciate you being here today. And if you're a reader, keep reading. If you're a writer, keep writing. And you will be listening to Patsy on Thursday. She will be back. It's been an absolute pleasure to be here today. And I am Bria Burton. You can find me at briaburton.com. Check out my writing and what I'm doing with the Science Fiction Book Buzz. And thank you again, Patsy, for this opportunity to guest host a science fiction themed show. I've had an absolute blast.